Blog Talk Radio. This podcast is brought to you by the Phantom Gallery Chicago Network, an artist-run project that exhibits the non-traditional gallery setting. Good morning, and welcome to another episode of and part two of Capital Regional Creative Course, Tactical Urbanism, Art and Placemaking. Good morning. We have Andrea on the line with us. Good morning.
Buenos dias. Greetings. Thank you for having me, Ms. Alpha.
Yeah. So before we begin, I want you to take a moment and introduce yourself and talk a little bit about your trajectory as an artist and cultural worker.
Absolutely. My name is Jennifer Andrea Porras, known in the community as Andrea or Yaya, and I've been working in at the crux, if you will, of the arts and culture scene since about 1995 or so, maybe a little earlier. I do work as an independent curator, a cultural, spiritual worker, and much of my work is centered around civic and social engagement.
Okay, great. And how, where am I talking to you from today?
Absolutely. I am in the Uchina or Oakland area of Northern California. Typically, I'm in Sacramento, the Mishinon, land of the mighty, the Miwok people. But I do a lot of work in between these two spaces, also Yalamu, San Francisco, and soon some work in San Jose.
Okay, great, great. You know, there's a little feedback going on, and if you could take yourself off of speakerphone, because we're picking up some background,
Absolutely.
And I really want to very
sure.
hear all the important information you're going to share with us today during this listening session. This is a listening session through the Creative Corps program that we're running here at the Sojourner Truth African Heritage Museum. And what we're doing is we're hosting these innovative programming that has two main objectives. Firstly, to develop a robust economic and workforce development program, and secondly, to demonstrate the vital role that artists from various disciplines can play in addressing our most pressing community issues. And so the artist team that we've assembled, you know, are artists that are doing the cultural work, artists that are working in the public sector, and we also are working with cross-sector partners that are artists doing projects that include focus on social justice and community engagement. So this, again, is the second part two of a discussion that we will have throughout this year with the artists doing their work. And so with that, we're going to talk, today about your work as art and social justice at the intersection of community engagement and what that means for you.
Yes, thank you so much, Alpha. Is this better? Can you hear me a little bit better with not being on speaker?
Yeah, great, because I was hearing, like, the ambient sounds of the traffic there in Oakland, California.
Street.
Yeah.
I'm in my back patio, a back deck office. It's where I love to set up in beautiful days like today. So most of my work as a young person who learned how to, march before I could walk, I've always been involved in work alongside my family or creative work to
invite my family into the work that I do, whatever age, whether it's my parents, the elders, or the youngest, at one point my son, now 20, or my nibblings, as I call them, my nephews and nieces, who are between the ages of, 12 and 15, 16 years old. So most of my work I create in community, with community, for community. And most recently, or currently, I'm working on a development with an artist that's based in Los Angeles, and I'm what they call a playwright doula. I'm working with a playwright and working with them and providing, synergy, notes, feedback, and thought questions, to the playwright as they tell the story. And we're working around women who've survived both domestic violence and males who've survived depression and PTSD from being incarcerated. So we're creating a new work, and I'm working with Jesse Bliss, and their theater company is called Roots and Wings, the Roots and Wings Project. They are also from Sacramento, but we work collectively over the phone and online and support each other in this way to produce work that will be coming out both in Los Angeles, Sacramento, and the Bay Area in the coming year. That's one work that I'm creatively in the process of right now. Another work is actually writing a second rendition of Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women play, one that premiered in San Francisco back in 23, hoping to produce something to provide in Sacramento and in Oakland in the coming year, before the year ends, centering around missing black girls and also missing indigenous young girls. So this piece would be focused on more of the younger generation who go not only into the system as survivors, but also go into the system as missing people, and go and also talk about the families doing the work to find peace and justice around the policies that exist and the policies that don't exist to support the process of fighting for these young women to get home and to get well.
I know that you, and then I applaud you again for, doing the work in this intersection of, like social justice and, and the arts. But you recently curated an exhibition with Stan Padilla. Can you talk a little bit about that curatorial work?
Absolutely. Stan Padilla was recently awarded a California Legacy Award, and the an organization that was doing the actual facilitation of the grant making called Youth Speaks, based in San Francisco. And I was called upon by Stan, who has been a mentor really from afar and not so close in my 30 years of living in Sacramento. I've worked with his colleagues who unfortunately have now deceased closer in proximity, Juanicio Orozco and Jose Montoya, as mentors that, were very close in guiding my process as a creative, as an artist, artivist. But they were a mentor by way of like their spiritual work and their work that they were doing around the world, maybe in Tibet, maybe in New Mexico, maybe in Africa. And so I'd always, watch from afar and listen from afar, but feel very close and very connected. Stan reached out to me and shared with me that they appreciated the work I was doing at as a curator for the past couple of years at Classy Hippie Tea, owned by Leo Hickman in Sacramento, black male, cis, phenomenal business person. Originally from Chicago, I believe, and then, has been in Sacramento for, I think, about a dozen years now. But he's the business owner who allowed me to come in and use his cafe walls as a space to lift up and center Black and Indigenous, you know, artists of the region. And so Stan is one. Goss is another, but we're focused on Stan right now. So Stan brought in works that he called his like milagros or his intention pieces. So they were pieces that were small versions of his large murals. And so some of them were maquettes, if you will. Others were more intentional to be pieces that people could have in their home. You can't always have a mural in your home. You could do it if you have that kind of cash flow. But he created pieces that were large size and small size over the years. And so I had a bit of a retrospective show of Stan Padilla. And he called them his potential portals also. Because he really wanted people to have them in their homes to focus on, you know, their centering, their healing, and their projections of how they want things to shift in this world and how they would take action to do so. But, you know, it all begins with that first step of grounding and meditating and seeing yourself in the action before you know, going into the real world and doing it outside of your cocoon, outside of your home, outside of your safe space.
And you're talking about, you know, and I've known Stan, for, three decades, the past 30
yes.
years, you know, and seeing the spiritual
yes.
work that he has done. And then, you know, he invited him, 10 years ago to a retreat that was hosted in Auburn, California, at the grounds on the land of Anita Pazilo, up in Auburn,
yes.
Where he came out and him and Josie Talamantes came out and blessed the land that we were doing the retreat on. And so, you know, I always speak very highly of him and in the work that he's doing in the spiritual realm. And about that, you know, you talked a minute and you talked about portals. And recently, I know you just did a project here at Sojourner Truth with the City of Altars, and talk a little bit about the installation that you did as one of the curators for the Sojourner Truth, altar installation.
Sure. I mean, I really owe so much to yourself and to Michelle Walker for putting me on this path of not only being an artist in practice with my community members, but an artist administrator and also an artist curator. And, you know, the guidance that both you and Josie and Stan, and I love that you constantly brought me into this circle or this triangle between them, and so lucky that they are still here. Of course, Michelle is not physically here. Michelle Walker, our late Michelle Walker, is not physically here, but constantly feel her as like the fourth pillar in this in this existence that I get to walk. And so, with your connection to these elders and to yourself, I've just really felt the responsibility to not only continue to cultivate and make work that allows people to tap into their healing, their centering, and their spiritual path, whatever that may be, but also to create spaces for other artists to show up and hold that space and create work that speaks to people that maybe I'm not reaching, right? And what you've created in the Whatnot Shelf altar speaks to people that don't really relate to or understand why we use corn, why we use sand, why we use flower petals, and why we use candles, right? So I think it's very important to have, when you're creating a show slash a portal to a realm that you're trying to bring people in, that it's very diverse and that it's very unique from the multiple lived experiences, so that people can see themselves in the different stages, so they can see their relatives in different stages represented by, you know, everyone who puts their heart and soul into the work, whether it's a painting, you know, whether it's an installation, whether it's an altar. But I think that both Stan and, you know, Michelle, yourself, Shona, have always, you know, Armando Cid, who brought us, you know, through Josie, connected us in this way to always have altares as a part of what we do, not just for Day of the Dead, not just for Kwanzaa, but in our daily life, in our daily way of carrying forward, you know, the work that we carry as cultural workers, cultural bearers. And it's very important for us to connect our lineages and our ancestral memory, I think, in order to see ourselves in the future. We have to understand ourselves from the past in order to trust that we will be here, that the generations to come will, you know, continue to carry forth and change and shift and heal is very important. So, you know, the saying is we can't go forward without knowing from where we came, right? So it's been a wonderful full circle to come back into the walls and doors and halls of the Sojourner Truth Museum Heritage Center, because, you know, I believe when you brought me in to this work of arts administration, you and Michelle were mentoring both Shona and I. And, you know, what a wonderful opportunity it is to come back home, you know, whether I'm physically there or not all the time. I just really feel that that grounding and also that super motivation and inspiration to continue doing what I do beyond walls, knowing that those walls are there for people to walk into any day of the week in Sacramento.
You know, and thank you for that, because sometimes in our narratives, you know, we, and I like the way you all gave so much respect to, you know, your the elders and also for, you know, the elders before you that have ascended, you know, and you're doing this work.
Yes.
Because we all stand on the shoulders, you know, on the stories of and experiences of the ones before us that have been in our circle,
right.
You know. And so that's why I try to take every opportunity to pull you back in and over the years check in on you and your practice. And you know what I mean? And, you know, always
yeah.
speak highly of the diversity in which you work and how you don't straddle between, you know, the fence on any of it. When you're in, you're all the way in. You know, in this episode,
mm-hmm.
I did, you know, outline the work that you've been doing at the Native American Tribal Leadership and Community.
Mm-hmm.
And you were on a task force at one time, you know, can you talk a little bit about that? Because that goes right into your civic and social engagement work.
Sure, sure. This past year, I had the honor to work with L. Frank Manriquez, who's based in Santa Rosa. They are 74, I think, this year, and that we actually celebrated their birthday while we were on this, what we call a canoe journey. And the canoe journey was created by the tribes out in Washington, the state of Washington. And so for a little over 2 weeks, I traveled with L. Frank and documented L. Frank and the work that they were doing with intergenerational Native Tongva, meaning people from the region of Los Angeles, which they are. They are Tongva and Rarámuri, people of northern Mexico. And they call themselves a Hollywood Indian because they were born and they were raised in Santa Monica. On the Santa Monica Boulevard, they say their father was in a lot of the old Hollywood movies, as a native and a cowboy. So that's why they call themselves a Hollywood cowboy. I'm sorry, a Hollywood Indian. Anyhow, with L. Frank, L. Frank does a lot of work in the museums, or has done a lot of work in the museums, speaking to pieces that are in the collections that have been taken from indigenous tribes that many of them are seeing have been recently returned to tribes around California because of the work that they've done. So they also are a language retriever and a canoe maker. And although they don't get in the canoe, they are the one who blesses, the canoe crew members going out and receiving them, blessing them and receiving them coming back in. And so that's the work I was able to document this summer alongside them in this journey for about two and a half weeks. And I think it's really important because I was able to bring some of those photographs back and share them with the Bay Area American Indian Two-Spirit organization that's been around for 20 years, and we're about to celebrate our 13th annual Two-Spirit powwow in San Francisco at the Fort Mason Center in February. So being a part of that organization has really allowed me to connect with new elders in my queer community that are of indigenous descent from around the nation, and also connect with, I believe they're the ones who nominated me for an organization that I'm working with called LeaderSpring, and I'm part of a cohort of Native American women, Alaskan women, First Nations women, leaders from the Bay Area. And so I have recently relocated to create more work, to create more service and more connection with these leaders here in this area for my new era at 51.
Yeah, but you still are like by city, you know, you're going between the capital region in the purpose of this project. And, and your roots
yes.
that are there in Sacramento. So segueing from that, and I know that this is the same weekend as the 2024 Black History Heritage Festival, which will be
right.
in Sacramento at the Sojourner Group African Heritage Museum on February 10th.
Yes.
And it's kind of like we're going to have a panel discussion on as a cross-sector partner. And you mentioned the nonprofit that you co-founded, but your actual nonprofit as a cross-sector. What's the name of that project?
Yes, thank you, Alpha. MA Series Arts. And my dear sister and colleague, Amy Reed, Amy Melissa Reed, who is a phenomenal musician and priestess with the House of Ma'at, that studied with Ione and Pauline Oliveros in the world of sound, sound and composing from nature, you know, from the breath of the trees and the rhythm of and the cadence of the rivers. So Amy and I co-created Ma Series Arts. And we center on focusing our support as fiscal sponsors and producers for work with, BIPOC, Indigenous and Black, specifically identified femme artists. So we include people like Bernard Brown of Bernard Brown Moves in Los Angeles, who's a professor at Loyola, Lee Harris, who's a Grammy Award winner, Mariana from Mariana Souza, Mari Works, who will be speaking on my behalf, as well as Onesia Riley, who holds an organization called Safe Black Space in Sacramento. Mariana and Onesia will be in my place on the 10th, and I will be present on the 11th for our 5K walk.
Okay, great. So we only have like 5 minutes left on our listening session, and I want to kind of get to the investigation questions and your response as an independent community art curator at the intersection of cultural, spiritual, civic, and social engagement. I'm going to just do these three mm-hmm. questions, and you can just take one. They're all probably similar. How can the community help you
okay.
to restore environmental justice within your local communities? And the other question is, how will we rebuild our communities to be stronger and recreate sustainable living spaces, our places? And in what ways did you view yourself as an artist in our community's challenge in building a strong, sustainable, safe place?
Okay. Can you repeat the second one? I think I want to go there. I think I have some things to speak in the living spaces.
Yeah, the second one was how will we, our communities, to be stronger and recreate sustainable living places?
Well, thank you, Alpha. My work with the cafe that's clothes and food for everyone, thankful to my parents, Andy and Josie Porras, who have been doing this work for over 11 years. I think I can clock in about 8 years myself of their 11, because I've been in and out of Sacramento. But on a daily, the founder, Armando Cielo, heads out into Sacramento to provide what we do weekly. And that is a little bit of clothes, a little bit of food, maybe blankets, maybe socks, you know, just kind of immediate care for our unhomed relatives in the Sacramento region. But collectively, every Sunday morning in our house, we either make food and or pack food and or package food, you name it. It depends. Sometimes we're over the stove and sometimes we're in the oven, and other times we're bagging things like, you know, 300 bagels that I've collected the day before from the dear hearts over at the Broadway Noah's Cafe. I'm going to give them a little plug because they've been supporting us for some years. But, you know, it might be soy riso, it might be potatoes and huevos, it might be spaghetti. But on any given Sunday, this organization, Cafe, is out providing not only food, but clothes and shoes and toiletries, et cetera. And this is completely run by volunteers. This is like a direct service on the ground. However, we don't want to keep doing this, but it's what we have to keep doing because our city as a whole has not really taken the best foot forward in collectively creating a solution. So the other part to this point is being active with people like Sacramento Mutual Housing, which I had the pleasure and honor of working for about 4 years at one point. And what I did there is I was a community organizer and worked with people to help get them to understand their place in civic engagement and placing them in front of City Hall and, you know, speaking on behalf of the injustices that were happening in their communities, whether those were drive-by shootings, whether that was not enough, you know, grocery stores in the neighborhood and too many liquor stores in their neighborhood, whether it was too many stops by the cops for people who, you know, are trying to get to job 2, 3, and 4, and providing directly what you taught me, arts education. So it's about getting involved with organizations like that and also creating organizations that are watchful around people who are hiking up, you know, rent because of gentrification. So, you know, renters organizations, for example, or homeowners organizations that are for people that are, you know, below the living wage in Sacramento. So it's also fighting for living wages. So being present on the ground is one thing, but being present in policymaking is another, and being in communication with our policymakers and holding them accountable for what they are responsible to us as voters is even more instrumental, I would say, to make everything work, right? Because it can't just all be on the activists. It can't all just be on the artists. It can't just all be on the nonprofit organizations. It has to be everybody doing their part. So that would be my answer, is becoming involved, becoming, aware, and then taking the first foot forward and finding one's place and their responsibility to community, their responsibility to creating solutions, and being solution-based, not being like, not in my neighborhood, you know, a NIMBY kind of person saying, you know, am I going over time?
We want to thank you for, for listening. Thank you for joining us today. And we're at the end of our, I look forward to talking with you on the pop-up research station cafe.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Alpha. I love you.
All right. Love you too.